Hello, listeners. This is Lady P here. No relation to Master P. I'm actually only here for a brief sec just to intro this new program we're doing with Martin, our co-producer, Martin Kessler, is debuting his new podcast program segment thing. We're still sort of working out the branding, but...
just a little sub-podcast.
Yeah. Yeah, just some podcast. But yeah, I guess Martin decided to go off on his own and make a new thing. So I'm here to support him. Whatever, I'm not at all hurt that he didn't invite me. That's fine. all right, Martin, tell the people why you decided to betray me and the listeners and go off and do your own podcast.
I mean, for me, I think it was just a way to stay productive when I'm not necessarily in an episode or working on an episode. I thought it'd be fun to contribute things that might not necessarily fit into the regular programming. I'm still going to be on the feed. I'll still be on the regular show. I'm not going anywhere. It's just a way to get a little bit extra stuff to people. I think if you're a listener, it means more for you, not less. So hopefully you'll have stuff to look forward to.
Exactly. And maybe one of these days, Martin will invite me on his show. That's fine.
Maybe.
That would be great.
It's possible.
Yeah. If he's feeling generous. But anyway, in all jokes aside, I think this is going to be great because more Martin is always better. And more programming is always better. And frankly, there are movies that I don't care to talk about and Martin can do it for me. So
there's
can I interest you in taking on Salo? So that I don't have to.
I would love to. I love Salo.
Oh, there you go. Done. Done and done. But in the meantime, Martin, today you're talking about The Witch, Robert Eggers' The Witch.
I believe so, yes.
All right.
And away we go.
Away we go. All right. Here goes nothing. Enjoy, listeners.
Hello, I'm Martin Kessler. I'm here with one of the smartest and most knowledgeable people I know, Burton Fisher, who I've learned a lot from. And I'm hoping to do that right now as we talk about The Witch, which is a recent film, but I think a very intriguing one. It's first-time director Robert Eggers, and it's set in 17th century New England, involving a family being torn apart by a supernatural forces, maybe. I don't know, would you say that's right? Or?
Yeah, I think that's definitely a it's safe assumption. I think it would be a very hard argument for someone to make that nothing is going on in this film
right.
with this family.
I've heard a few people try to make the argument that there's nothing really supernatural going on until maybe the very end, but I don't really buy into that.
Yeah, I have a hard time with that too. I think the moment Samuel's taken,
right,
is really, and particularly when they do a pretty good job of letting you know that she's not like 2 feet from the forest,
right,
that something's off, and obviously it does leave open the possibility that at that point that she took Samuel, but yeah, it's very hard to say that it just started then.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there are certain ambiguities in the film, which I can see people reading different things into, although I think certain readings are stronger than others. I don't know if part of that tendency to say that maybe there's nothing supernatural or that it's really all Thomasin, it maybe relates to the film drawing a little bit on Stanley Kubrick's adaptation of The Shining, where people have often said that there might not be anything supernatural going on or that the supernatural is completely benign, and just the Jack Nicholson character misinterpreting what he sees makes him go mad, or something like that. Although I think, like you said, the supernatural forces in The Witch have more of a presence.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a really important thing to note with The Witch is that, you know, this isn't just a horror movie, and although I don't really have a problem with people calling it a horror movie because it definitely has enough elements to be one, for me, it's much more really straight up a religious movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really a movie about religion of that time, of the Puritans, you know, who had just left England, and also of religion for this family who has this, you know, father who has clearly had a religious break with the colony. And then it comes up later in the film that his difficulty and his anger with the church was so great that he didn't even baptize Samuel.
Right.
Yeah, and I think that's huge. So I think it's important to understand that they are definitely undergoing a religious experience, and whether or not it is a supernatural religious experience or a family who deeply believes in these elements and what they believe and are kind of undergoing it out in the desert forest.
I mean, it seems to me that maybe the beliefs of the characters are put under pressure by these circumstances, and what you're really seeing exposed are the faults in the family dynamic. There are times where the horror almost fell into the background, and it just was this atmosphere of dread in which you could watch a family drama play out where the extremity of the circumstances turned the family against one another.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think for one thing is they all, you know, anyone who has been raised in a Christian or a Catholic background has probably had some experience where, you know, some of the stories, whether it's the Abraham-Isaac story or the notion of Christ being crucified or the first time you're told, you know, particularly for Catholics, that you're going to be eating the actual flesh and blood of Christ, there's in essence a horror already kind of built in to the religion. And they carry with it. I think the one who really seems to carry it the most is Caleb.
Right. The son.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, twofold. You know, one thing, his father, it's very made clear, obviously, that it's not necessarily that he desires his sister, but that he's becoming a young man with, you know, he's going to puberty, and his father has been dumb enough to cut him off. I don't want to call him dumb, but myopic enough. I'll be, you know, kinder to cut him off from other women. So the only young girls, this isn't like justifying desiring your sister, but it does explain that he sees it and he turns away and he feels bad.
Right.
And of course, this is brought worse with the whole thing, the whole notion with Samuel and whether or not Samuel was in hell.
Mm-hmm. That speech the father gives about the, is it predestination or?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a big, one thing Eggers clearly seems to have done his research is in the notion of predestination that the Calvinist Puritans had was that you didn't necessarily have much choice. You just had to work to get God's grace. And if you didn't have time to do it like Samuel did, and you weren't baptized, which is something even the Catholics like Thomas Aquinas believed, that child was going to hell at the worst and to limbo at best, which wasn't something clearly that Caleb wanted to hear.
I mean, I thought it was interesting that the perspective of the film, it's largely anchored with the, not the youngest children, but Thomasin and Caleb, because you get a sense that they're still coming to understand what the beliefs actually are of their surroundings. So I think as an audience who's maybe not familiar with puritanical beliefs, it was a good entry point to ask those questions about how they saw the world.
Yeah, that's a great point. It really wasn't laying pipe. You know, it didn't come off as exposition. Mm-hmm. And it came off as something that, you know, I mean, I think the father really, you know, he's a good man. I mean, he cares for his children. He cares for his family. He just happens to have the number one sin, which is pride. Mm-hmm. And it's very interesting. It's very easy, it seems, for him to defy his colony and his religious leaders, and yet he can't free himself from doctrine.
Right.
And yet on the same side, when it comes time to kind of avoid letting his wife know that he stole her cup, he lets Caleb lie, which is a huge sin, that whole apples lie, and he lets Thomasin catch it. So he also is someone who is, you know, like kind of the whole family on this precarious, you know, precipice between staying saved and being damned.
Mm-hmm. I mean, one of the most moving scenes in the film is when he's repenting his prideful nature when he's ready to eat dirt and asking for forgiveness. Oh, yeah. I thought that was a very moving moment, because you really get a sense that people are people and that they might try their best to live to the standards of their religious beliefs or the practices of the time period, but people are flawed in the ways that they are today. And I think that was part of what made the film relatable.
I think it's a mistake. I've heard people try to portray it just as pure allegory.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that this is just representative of what we're going through today. And I just don't think that works. I mean, Eggers, as you noted, really has worked hard to kind of make this somewhat realist.
Right.
And yet, it does obviously have a kind of allegorical effect, because all of these are issues that we go through, I mean, as people. Secondly, and I'm not trying to exclude you here because the Canadians are involved too, but Americans have this – we really are – have this real Puritan tradition that we've never quite extricated ourselves from. Mm-hmm. And so it does have relevance.
Mm-hmm. I mean, in some ways it does function as a metaphor and allegory of the film, but the characters are so three-dimensional that it doesn't feel like they're meant to be purely stand-ins. I think you're right. You know, there's a scene where the mother character, played by Kate Dickey, when she's I forget how she phrases it exactly, but that she's been a shrew, and she's sort of a character that could have easily felt like a complete cardboard cutout. It's totally well-rounded, and there's an inner emotional life that I think lets the drama function to the point where I thought you could almost have a version of this film without the supernatural elements, although I don't think it would be as interesting necessarily.
Oh, no, absolutely. And she's kind of the one, and Thomason does this too. I think that's another thing that Eggers does well, is that we really have a kind of a stream of history that, you know, this family isn't just removed from the colony, but like the rest of their colony members, they're just removed from England. You know, when Thomason talks about the windows, and obviously with the mother really cherishing the silver cup and wanting to go back to England, that they haven't really fully left it.
Right.
You know, I think that's very important.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting because she seems very much into what her husband's doing, but she very quickly leaves it. And of course, it kind of makes sense that she's the only one who really has the crisis of faith. And then, of course, we also have this notion, too, that she has this tie back to herself when she was Thomason's age, which, of course, makes sense of her having difficulty with Thomason's sexuality and Thomason in general.
Do you think that budding sexuality is part of what sets Thomason's character apart from the rest of the family, that they feel threatened by it? It's sort of a threat to this puritanical values. I know the director, Robert Eggers, said one reason why he cast Anya Taylor-Joy as Thomason is he thought that she could never be a Puritan, which is an interesting casting decision.
Yeah, that's interesting because, I mean, you know, she does have this very, I mean, obviously angelic face.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at the beginning of the movie, you know, she's looking at us and looking at the camera. And then, you know, we immediately see her praying. So our kind of entree to Thomason is this very kind of innocent young woman. But then it quickly changes. Not that she becomes, you know, evil or bad quickly, but it seems very clear that she's not comfortable being this kind of good, controlled girl whose sexuality is looked odd upon by her parents. She's not comfortable to be pawned off to a family. So she really, I mean, you know, her becoming the witch, which, you know, it can be discussed whether this is a good thing or bad thing, although when a family is torn apart, it's hard to see it's entirely good. But it clearly is a romantic thing for Thomason to free her. And it frees her in a direction and a mode that we can't comprehend, because it's both outside the comprehension of her and her time, and it's outside ours.
I think of that shot as soon as she realizes that everyone in her family's dead, where she undoes the clothing, and there's sort of a sense of relief that comes with it. It's sad, but she's also free and can take off this tight clothing, and she's already in some sense liberated even before she signs that devil's book. And I keep thinking how many of my favorite horror stories, it's not like the main character overcomes and defeats evil so much as it is by interacting with evil or some darker force, they're transformed by it and have a broader, more interesting view of the world, which I think is maybe the case with Thomason's character.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, definitely. I mean, it's very clear she was going in that direction already. She was starting to assert herself very strongly towards her father. She was starting to remove herself from her parents' power. You know, at that time, for a woman like her, a young woman for her, and at 14, 15, she was a young woman then, to do that would be seen like being a witch. It would be seen as evil. I mean, they were very Old Testament, and defying your parents was about as evil as you can get. So what I like about the film is that it doesn't really allow you to really erase either possibility. It's very hard to say that there aren't some quote-unquote bad things involved. But it's also not hard to say that Thomason isn't liberated, because she is, as are these women, whether they exist or not, or just for Thomason, they seem to be partaking in a liberation too.
It's a... all the way throughout the film, too, I kept thinking how, even though so much of the movie is exterior shots, it doesn't feel very expansive. It feels very closed in visually, the woods creeping, the, you know, it's quite intimate visually. But at the end, I think it opens up a little bit, especially when you see the witches dancing around the fire. I think that theme is maybe... expressed in some way with the visuals of the film.
That's a great point, because there is a lot of talk about them going into the wilderness, and there is a lot of talk of it being like the desert, like, you know, Christ going in the desert. Mm-hmm. And it very much works that way, that we have the idea that Mercy and Jonas were probably, you know, little disobedient, you know, but charming in their own way kids, and you know, that they have these problems. And
I like when they're finally tied up, they can't get away.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of the things I find charming about the father, too, because he's very, you know, you see parents every day, you know, in Starbucks or whatever, being very impatient with kids who are only 5, 6. And he's pretty patient when he falls and everything, and they laugh after they've been chasing Black Phillip. He just kind of says, oh, you know, leave me alone. He's a very patient father.
And what the twins accuse Thomason of being a witch, he takes the accusation very seriously, but ultimately says, I didn't raise a witch, and gives her the benefit of the doubt, which I think is also something sort of remarkable about that character.
Yeah, I totally agree, except that he quickly, but maybe correctly, goes and tears into Jonas and Mercy. You know, and he talks about he's going to be Abraham, and Jonas is going to be his... But yeah, you know, he's clearly he's the lost character, and I think he's trying to wants to believe Thomason, and then he goes after the others, and then he can't deal with it, so he just locks them all up, and we all see how that works out.
Right.
But yeah, it's that's another great thing too, is that they don't suffer this as a gestalt. This isn't like a family just dealing with it as a group, which they do. It's also all of them as individuals in their own way, dealing with whatever is out there. And part of it is probably the devil. And yet, we got to talk about the rabbit, because the rabbit always...
Of course. Yes.
But part of it's God, you know. For them, the Puritans, having to face God with your sins is almost as terrifying, if not as terrifying, as facing Satan.
Right. It's definitely God-fearing people. It's
definitely.
Do you want to talk about the hair? It's...
Yeah, I'd like to hear your thoughts first. I'd love to hear what you
think about it. I mean, I think that there's an older tradition of hares and some of the other animals, that definitely goats and ravens, sort of being associated with witches and the devil. But beyond that, I was kind of curious about the film's relationship with nature. Do you find that maybe it is these characters imposing some sort of structured belief system on something completely chaotic, that it's a little bit
chaos reigns
beyond their understanding. Or sorry, I didn't phrase that well, but
no, I think you phrased it perfectly, and I think in a very much sense we as an audience do that too with this.
Mm-hmm.
We, all of us, even if we try to be more enlightened and not do it, are going to somehow try to give this some kind of meaning based on, you know, our previous beliefs before we saw it. And I think in a very much they do it. I think the mother clearly seems to be the one who's very respectful of that is beyond them. Mm-hmm. I think the fact that she really fears the woods the most is that she really seems to have the awe of it. I think very quickly Thomason's very seduced by it. You know, the kids very much, as kids would do, see it as, well, hey, this guy's telling us to play, not listen to our parents. That sounds cool. It's not really an existential thing. But for Thomason, it really is. And I think you see that contrast. The mother's terrified, but, you know, when Mercy accuses her from being the witch, she suddenly realizes, is that such a bad thing?
Right.
And yet, as much as Eggers shows, you can never look at the witch the witch that Caleb encounters. We can never fully know if that's exactly what he did encounter. You know, we that may be what he sees.
Right.
Yeah.
It seems like there's some layer of ambiguity right up until, I think, when Black Phillip transforms into the devil. And the real visual manifestation, it's the levitation at the end. It's sort of a Tarkovsky and flourish, the women floating up into the sky. I know Tarkovsky himself had worked on a project called The Witch before he moved on to The Sacrifice, which I think was like maybe just coincidentally the same title. I don't know if Eggers would have drawn on that. I think the story was about a man who leaves his family for a witch after she cures his cancer. Which, again, maybe you would have had destruction in the family unit, or who knows what that would have been like. But that's sort of where my mind went with the religious quality of the levitation at the end.
You know, absolutely. And I think in a certain sense, that's the point where I think allegory for a film like this becomes most useful. Not in a way to kind of solve the film, but in a kind of way to see, like, how we live our lives, whether we are religious or not, religiously, and how we do that. Because, you know, we wouldn't go see a film like this if we didn't know a story like this doesn't still kind of resonate to us.
Mm-hmm.
But we also still know, you know, none of us literally are, you know, I hope not, are going out to the woods or the desert with the notion of witches. But we do... leave our belief systems, and we do make jumps that can have just as terrifying notions for us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but that being said, I still really appreciate the film as is, as really, like I said, a rare true religious film. And as I said, I wouldn't exactly. I think it's a big reason a lot of fanboys are disappointed with the film. Is that it's not really a horror film whose intent is to scare us.
No, it's not Evil Dead. It's not that sort of film.
Oh, absolutely. But I think what it is really about the horror of religion, the horror of breaking from society, and the horror from going out on your family, which, you know, I think it covers really well.
I mean, it's so interesting how you see that isolation, how the family breaks down, everyone seems to break down and is ultimately destroyed by that isolation, except for the most individualistic character, who is ultimately emboldened and who leaves with a different worldview. I think that's maybe the core of the story, to me at least.
Yeah, I know, absolutely. And that's another thing that's very American. I mean, it's, you know, America...
It's a very individualist American story when you get right down to it, yeah.
Oh, absolutely. You know, capitalism, Americanism, we do have this very kind of interesting paradox that both celebrates this kind of, you know, just rampant individualism, but it also celebrates kind of falling in with the group. But yeah, Thomason, it's like you said, I think you said it very well. She really is an American story. And particularly as a woman, you know, there's no way to avoid the gendered aspect that it would have been a different story if Caleb was the older one and Thomason was the younger one. The way she's treated, the way she sees herself in the family, it very much comes from being a young woman at that time.
Mm-hmm.
So it's also a really, you know, really, I feel like I'm trying to sell the movie or something, but it's a great movie about gender too.
Right.
American gender.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I just want to get one more Tarkovsky dig in, but I always think of Stalker, for instance, how, you know, when they finally get out and they're in this zone that's completely free and their innermost desires can be realized, it's absolutely terrifying how scary that is to be free, you know. Or think of Milan Kundera, The Unbearable Lightness of Being. Freedom's scary for most people. Freedom, it's very isolating and it's very terrifying, but you know, once in a while you see somebody who thrives in it, and I think that's the core American myth, is the triumph of the individual, right?
Yeah, you know, it really is. I mean, and yet it's what we celebrate. I mean, America is you know, not that European, you know, that a lot of, you know, the Italians and the French, you know, a lot of other countries like their romanticism too.
Right.
But American, you know, whether it's the Western, you know, the cowboy or sci-fi, America just has this real tradition of celebrating people who were able to free themselves from the past and free themselves from restrictions of the past and move forward into the unknown. So, yeah, Thomason's a really American character. And it really – one thing – another thing, I think a great film or a great book – is that every time you think about it, like every few months you think about it again, it comes differently. That the memory of a film or a book like this is that every time you think, no, now I kind of think it this way. And The Witch really has that ability while maintaining a strong coherence as still a solid film.
I don't know. I think that's pretty good. Is there anything else you want to mention? Or
let's see. I was thinking of some other films that reminded me of it. Just, you know, if people wanted to see films like this, I think Frailty really, I mean, I think you brought up, bringing up Tarkovsky is great, and even in Kundera too, because they're very cerebral terror kind of oriented.
Frailty is, that's a really great example, because it feels less like the terror of the devil and more the terror of what God wants you to do and what, how you're being judged and whether you're doing the right thing. And those sort of anxieties come through a little bit like The Witch.
Oh, absolutely. And what I love about it is that it's like, you know, we're kind of all on the side of the oldest son, you know, like, oh my God, dad's crazy. You know, dad's completely lost it. And again, like when we go back, we talk about The Witch, that facing God is as scary, if not as scary, as facing Satan. That, you know, the notion that this guy talked to him and God wanted him to do this, it carries this really kind of strong metaphysical feel throughout the whole film. And it demands that American audiences who, and I know this myself, you know, in academics and intellectuals, we can sometimes be very condescending towards religious people.
Sure.
Yeah. this movie doesn't say necessarily yay religion, but it says, like, you know, try to encounter these things and how necessarily these kind of thoughts and ideas still resonate with us. And Frailty, I thought, was a movie a lot like The Witch that way.
Yeah, that's a really, really good example. No, it's true. Like, there is sort of a lack of intelligent religious-themed films in America, which is strange because I do think of it as more of a religious country than many others. It's in the Western world anyway. Like it's surprising you don't see more people making films that really delve into and dissect or struggle with some of the big questions about religion. You know, it seems to fall into these days like either you know, films that dismiss it completely, or films that take it seriously and are entirely naive, right? You know, there's maybe a handful of exceptions.
No, I mean, I completely agree. I think, you know, we've had, obviously we had, you know, directors you know, it's interesting, you know, Scorsese is obviously a Catholic director, and he addresses them, but, you know, he always seems to me as a director who's much more interested in the aesthetics.
Right. It's more in the textures of his film than really the subtext. Well, I guess it is there, but it's in understanding the backgrounds of these characters. You know, I always think of even his most religious films, like... something like Last Temptation of Christ, at the end of the day, it's really a character study that has religious implications. It's not, or I don't know, maybe I'm off base. What do you think?
No, I think that was really well said. I really see it. I really see it as an existential movie, in the form of a religious film. You know, it's a kind of film that, and I think it's why a lot of non-Christians still really enjoy it.
Right.
Bringing us back to The Witch, it's one thing The Witch conveys very well is that religion and culture, that you just can't separate them.
You really get a sense, there's no place to say, well, the Puritan culture ends here and the religious beliefs start there. They're completely intertwined.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that it is part of the reason why Marxist scholars have loved studying Puritans. One of my advisors was one. Of course, I can say, like, Judaism's obviously a lot like that, too.
Right.
And that, it's very interesting because America does kind of become different this way. It does become kind of different. And you look back at the Puritans, and these were people who had no illusion about it. Except maybe the dad, which was maybe a big part of his undoing.
Right. All right, I think that about wraps things up. Thank you for joining me, Burton Fisher. If folks want to follow you, you're on Twitter at Fisher Burton. If people want to follow me, I'm at Movie Kessler. And of course, the show's Twitter is at FlixWise. You can check out the website, FlixWise.com. And please don't be afraid to subscribe and give us a rating and review over on iTunes. Big thank you to Marcus Pinn for doing the music. And I'm going to pass you back over to Lady P, who's going to tease what's coming up in the near future.
Thank you, Martin, for, yeah. Oh, God, okay.
Stabbing you in the back.
Yeah, thanks for stabbing me in the back, Martin. That's sweet. Okay. what are friends for? Okay, so on our next show, we have James Naremore coming in to talk to just me, which is cool. Someone still cares that I'm on. Hopefully our listeners do, too. Yeah, we're going to talk about Orson Welles' Touch of Evil. So regardless of how you feel about me, hopefully James Naremore talking about Orson Welles is enough of a draw for everybody. And then following that episode, we have Joshua Wilson pitching A Shot in the Dark for the FlixWise Favorites list. But the big thing, the big episode that I've been teasing since I think the beginning of the year is that Philip Nagy, the screenwriter of Carol, which happens to be my favorite movie of 2015, also might be my favorite movie of the decade.
2016.
Yeah, 20 favorite movie of 2016, possibly my favorite movie of the decade. It's up there. Anyway, she's coming on the show, and I could not be more excited. We're going to talk about Carol, oh my God, and we're going to talk about Isabelle Huppert, which, I mean, you know, she's the talk of the town, so that should be also very, very exciting. Until then, Martin...
Lady P.
I forgive you. We're still friends. It's fine.
For now.
For now. In all seriousness, I'm excited that you get to do this and you get to talk about movies that you feel passionately about. And I'm glad that you have this platform. And I'm glad that listeners will have a chance to hear you talk in depth about movies that hopefully they enjoy. Just don't leave me out of any that I might like to talk about.
Sounds
That's
good.
My only ask. Okay. All right. Excellent. Thank you, Martin.
Thank you.